Welcome to this week's episode of The Shill Report, where journalism is reviewed and the stories of the week are expanded and explained. I'm your host, Ryan Ripley. Joining me on this quest to shed the light of liberty on the week's news is publisher of We Are Libertarians, Chris Spangle.
Hello.
And managing editor of the We Are Libertarians news site, Joe Ruiz.
Hello.
How are you, fine gentlemen, this evening?
Trying not. I think Joe and I both were trying not to troll you right there. Maybe I'll throw it as an Easter egg in at the end, but we've really
I think it should be. I want to hear that. I want to hear that again.
WNBC.
WNBC.
Oh, gosh. So, all right. Ryan Ripley, back to you.
Oh, you trolled me, guys. I can't close a show last week. I can't open one this week.
But take a deep breath.
Nah, we're good. It's truly been an interesting news cycle this, even just today, guys. We know that Snowden emerged for a meeting with humanitarian groups. Big sister Janet Napolitano has resigned from the Department of Homeland Security. Woohoo! And the Zimmerman trial seems to finally be wrapping up. I cannot believe that this monstrosity of a media circus is finally nearly at an end.
I'm so ready for it to be over. Like, I really like Jake Tapper's show at 4 o'clock on CNN, and I watch it when I get home. So when I get home every day, I watch Jake Tapper, then I watch the Brett Baer report or whatever it is on Fox News, and then I watch my girl Erin Burnett. And I haven't been able to do that. There hasn't been any real news on CNN or, well, Fox News, to Brett Baer's credit, has just had one little segment every show, but forget it. My man AC, 360, no news. Erin Burnett, nothing. Jake Tapper, nothing. And I even got into a Twitter fight with Jake Tapper about it. So it's,
I've been fortunate enough that in my world of radio sales, I only catch the clips, the sound bites that they play at the beginning and end of every hour. So that's been pretty good, because while I'm out on the road, which is not all the time, it's just periodically, I'll catch a little bit about what's going on, but it's not overkill. And I've done a pretty good job avoiding the mainstream media otherwise.
You know, one person who's been completely unable, much to his chagrin, to avoid the Zimmerman trial is NBC's White House correspondent, chief White House correspondent, Chuck Todd. Now, he is, of course, the host of The Daily Rundown on MSNBC, and the George Zimmerman trial has essentially hijacked his show. And in fact, when you watch him on the air and with this coverage going, you almost feel sorry for him as he tries to cover the real news, and apparently his production's crew and his staff just won't let him. Let's take a look at this first clip, and you'll see what I mean.
On the Zimmerman courtroom, this is The Daily Rundown. I'm Chuck Todd. Yes, those are more live pictures of that courtroom in Sanford, Florida. Meanwhile, let's turn to some other news that we know a lot of folks are trying to follow. I know I am. Yes, it's a busy day in Washington, but right now we're going to take you to the live pictures of the courtroom in Sanford before the trial starts. We may even try to sneak in what's happening and what matters here in Washington. I think a lot of us thought that they spent the weekend trying to get some of these things out of the way. A very lengthy hearing. Yeah, what kind of length of a trial do you expect now? The defense gave the indication that they thought they could wrap it up today. So how many more witnesses do we expect? Cameras in the courtroom are not always what they crack up to be, meaning you just never know what you're going to get and how long it takes. Of course, did not have time to air it during the program because of our coverage of the Zimmerman trial. NBC.com. That's it for what was an abbreviated edition of the Daily Run.
Boy, that was a pile of I don't give a crap about my job.
Yeah, you could tell Chuck Todd's been hitting the booze pretty hard every night. I think he's one depressed man.
Like there's the one part in there where he's like, well, he's basically asking a question like he's playing Angry Birds as he's asking the question. It's totally not distracted. So it sounds like my wife when I'm chatting on the We Are Libertarians Facebook chat, and then she's like, are you listening to me? And I'm like, no. So
yeah, I'm sure he is one man that is incredibly happy to see the defense rest and this trial go to the jury, and hopefully this all wraps up soon. And unless a verdict comes in that causes half of Florida to get lit on fire, I can't imagine this story is going to stay in the media much longer.
Yeah, I mean, unless there's some shenanigans after it's over. I mean, from the little bit I have seen, it looks like he's probably, you know, like I said, I don't even know the ins and the outs because I like political news and I like news that is, you know, world affairs, and this just does not interest me at all. And
so, in other words, you like news that matters, right?
Yeah.
And this doesn't really affect you.
Right.
Look, this is a murder case. This is a state trial in Florida, guys. This, you know, you guys live in Indianapolis. There's a shooting, you know, every other night. I live up in Fort Wayne. There's been well over 20 or 30 homicides in Fort Wayne this year. This is not a unique thing to the world. This is a trumped up, this is a media inflated circus that we've just been subject to for far too long.
Completely.
Agreed.
Yeah, I really think that it matters to some people, and I think people are drawn into, like, this one seems to have some levels of respectable bits of news leaking out of it. Like, this exemplifies the notion that, hey, we're going to attack on a ton of charges. We're going to start with high charges all the way down to the very bottom. So we're going to get you on something, and then we'll drop the charges as the trial goes along. I think that's indicative of what happens to a lot of people. So I do think that there is, you know, some tidbits of real applicable news because it does highlight some things. And maybe there is some merit to people seeing how the judicial system really actually works in America compared to, you know, objection, overruled, you know, and Law and Order and all that good stuff. So maybe it's beneficial for that reason. But I don't understand how CNN can justify spending twice the amount of time on that versus every other piece of news on CNN. That's something that Howie Kurtz mentioned on Fox News Sunday this past weekend. Howie is the media reporter for Fox News. He did Reliable Sources before that. And, you know, it really is a shame that people are missing out on the developments in Cairo and the Middle East when that's really, really important. Maybe it doesn't affect, maybe George Zimmerman might affect you or is more relatable to you, but that geo-global shift, and, you know, if the Suez Canal, for instance, is not secured, we're hosed as a world. So there are some real implications in the Middle East. It's just journalists don't understand the context of what's happening in Egypt.
Right. It's a difficult story, Chris. We talked about this before, that Egypt is hard, yet watching the Zimmerman trial nonstop is pretty simple. You have commentary and lawyers sitting there trying to speculate and come up with these different scenarios. It's even kind of sexy to some that, oh, he could get this charge or that charge. And it's really just media porn, and I can't wait to see it end.
But there's a racial undertone to it. There's an emotional connection to certain people because they think that there's, you know, some residual racism or, you know, issues stemming back from civil rights, you know, all the way up into this moment when we decide whether or not this kid was actually attempting to hurt Zimmerman or whether Zimmerman shot him unjustly in cold blood or, you know, I asked a guy, for instance, on Facebook. He had a post about it. And he's a black guy. I used to work with him. And, you know, he's always been a great guy, but he mentioned something about the trial, and you could tell that he was really invested. And all that I did was stepped in and said, you know what, I can't wait till it's over, you know. And with this trial, it's been frustrating to watch for me, or at least to hear about, because we've always had, or we're supposed to have, the presumption of innocence until being proven guilty. And, you know, that's been kind of my shtick throughout the entire thing. And he did not hear that argument at all. He completely flipped it, and he was like, oh, but if this was me and I had killed a little white boy, there wouldn't be any, you know, interests nationally about whether or not this case, that would just get thrown in jail, and I would just have, you know, like, it was completely about the racial narrative to him.
Well,
and that's frustrating, and that's why it is the big issue that it really is, and I'll just go ahead and say that.
But his argument doesn't make sense because, so he's saying that it's a travesty that he wouldn't get media coverage because he was a black guy killing a white guy. I mean, and Zimmerman's not even white. I mean, he's...
No. And he's not. Hispanic, but isn't the media painting that to be sort of the picture?
This thing got out of hand, you know, 4 to 8 weeks after it actually happened. And there was a report out, and we tweeted it out at some point on the We Are Libertarians Twitter feed, that a group, I think it's Judicial Watch, found documents that the administration actually went down there to support and possibly even organize rallies, you know, social justice rallies, you know, to remember Trayvon, basically inciting the racial undertones in this entire thing, which is a pretty shocking thing for a presidential administration to do. But, you know, I mean, I don't want to go all community organizers on you, but that's that's sort of the history of the background, and that is the mentality, I think, of a lot of the folks in this administration, that community action. You know, we got to get out and organize and march. And it really, this whole trial is a Rorschach test for where you stand. You know, last night at the end of the We Are Libertarians podcast, I asked Gina, who is the flaming, like, she's left of Mao on the libertarian scale. And I go, Zimmerman, guilty or not? Oh, he's so guilty. It's not even funny. And he should burn in hell even if he didn't do it. You know, and then you go to Greg, who is the Republican, and he's like, I think we should bomb everybody, you know, in that vein of libertarian. And he's like, oh, he's not guilty at all. He didn't do it. It was an honest mistake. You know, and I think it just totally is a Rorschach test, even if people are hearing facts or not absorbing them.
Yeah, and that's the thing about my friend is you said that wasn't necessarily a logical argument. But when people get so emotionally inflamed, how often are their arguments really logical? There just comes a point where they're so invested in it on an emotional level that just everything else fails.
Right. He is not arguing the facts of the case. He's arguing, well, what if this was me? What if this is happening to me? You know, that it's a very self-centered view of it.
Back to you, Ryan.
Hey, are you guys done? Or
I'm sorry.
Guys, this is just... It's such a divisive story, and it doesn't need to be. This is a fact-based situation. It's actually been laid out pretty well. I think, you know, we're going to find out if the jury agrees with that notion, but, you know, it didn't have to take this kind of angle, and it really shouldn't have, and it's unfortunate that we're even talking about, you know, these kind of things. Justice is supposed to be blind. That includes color blindness. I'd really like to see, you know, the jury come back with a well-thought-out verdict, and this can all just be done. And people will accept it, but unfortunately, it is now far too emotionally charged to be rational. Mm-hmm. And any outcome is going to upset one side or the other. And it really should not be this way.
Yeah,
the court system—it's not entertainment, guys. It should not be.
Yeah, this
should be rooting for either side. This should be a very serious and solemn process, and it's just been made into a mockery.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. There's really only two things that we can hope for from this point forward. One, that justice is legitimately served, and two, that we can just move past it.
Yeah, I think it's just a tragedy, and I think, in my opinion, it was probably an accident. It's not racially motivated. You know, he had a loaded weapon, and it discharged, and it was an accident. And, I mean, that is my own uneducated view of the tidbits that I have been exposed to over the time, and like, he doesn't seem to
have... Are we actually going to get into the details of this now?
No, I'm just saying, I think...
It doesn't matter. Okay, here's the things that I know.
Yeah, but I'm saying that it just seems so bogus to try and force, you know, racism onto George Zimmerman, or Trayvon Martin's a pothead, or... Like, that's the part of the narrative of the media that really just... Like, all the guests and all the posts that you see about it, it's like, you know... You have to demonize one side or the other when it's just a tragic situation for both sides, and you can't just see both sides as human beings, and this is a horrible, horrible incident.
Right. Yeah, and it's unfortunate that the media's, you know, they've clung on to this, and it's really just they're making money off of the death of a young man and possibly the end of a productive life for another, and it's just I don't believe that the court system was meant to be a sporting event, and I hope that we get away from that.
Oh, yeah, and Hollywood's done the same thing. I mean, I watched the BET Awards recently, and Jamie Foxx came on stage to do an introduction for somebody, and he was wearing a Trayvon shirt. That means that somebody is printing Trayvon Martin T-shirts, making money off of it, and two, it means that they're no longer interested in a real, honest, and just verdict that would that could go either way. They've already made up their minds on how they want this thing to pan out.
Zimmerman is in a total Richard Jewell situation where, you know, Richard Jewell was wrongly accused of being the Atlanta Olympics bomber in 96, and it ruined his life. And, you know, he ended up committing suicide over time because his life never recovered after being wrongly accused.
Yeah.
Right. And even if, you know, if Zimmerman is found innocent, he's allowed to go home, he'll never be safe. I mean, they've made these comments already that, you know, he'll never get fully his life back. He'll most likely have to leave the community that he's currently a member of, and where can he actually go where no one's going to know him? There's not going to be a good outcome either way in this case.
It just goes to show that, I mean, it's a sadistic side of our society in America and in the West. With Paula Deen, with Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman on both ends, you're just seeing the high-tech, I mean, the term is high-tech lynching, so I hate to use that term in this context, but it really is, it's like sadness porn. People just thrive off of seeing the misery of seeing TMZ and these other outlets just feed on people like Paula Deen and what a terrible person Trayvon or George Zimmerman is. And it's a really sick part of our media that I really do not read because I just find it distasteful.
You know, Chris, it's the modern day Coliseum.
Totally.
And we're all the spectators of these tragic events, and it really does speak volumes for our current culture.
Yeah, and nobody is being eaten by a lion, but they might as well be. They're being, I mean, exiled in a sense. They're being made out to be a leper.
No, the media is chewing people up and spitting them right back out. And, you know, the reality star that gets the 2 minutes of fame or the, you know, the teen mom who, you know, gets her face, you know, plastered all over for a little bit. They're all getting chewed up and spit out, and we're all there to sitting in our seats, eating the popcorn and watching. And I fear we're heading down that kind of path that every civilization goes down, that, you know, we get comfortable, we get sadistic, and then it just falls apart. And hopefully that's tinfoil hat kind of stuff, but there are some interesting parallels.
I think it leads into our next subject. I mean, there is no room in our society for redemption and for mistakes and accidents, and, you know, everything's got to mean something. Everybody has to have some sort of motive. Everything, you know, there are just no accidents. You know, the pilot in the San Francisco plane crash, he had to be drunk or he had to make a mistake. There's no, oh, it was an accident. It was a mixture of mechanical failure and it just was a bad situation. No, the guy has to be arrested for homicide. You know, it's somebody's got to be held accountable. You know, it's just, I think we as media consumers have to take a step back and say, like, am I participating in, you know, the Roman Colosseum and I'm enjoying somebody's demise? Not saying that Paula Deen, what she did was okay. Not saying what Jack Hunter did or said was okay. I'm not saying what George Zimmerman did was okay. I'm saying that at a certain point, you as a media consumer just have to go, I'm part of the problem, and I need to step back from this, and I need to put myself in their shoes.
Well, let's talk about redemption. Let's pivot over to Jack Hunter. He is Senator Rand Paul's social media director. He has recently been outed, and really not so much outed. I don't think it was a huge secret that he is the Southern Avenger. And in his past, you know, as recently, I believe, as 2009, he was a Confederacy-boosting radio personality. He celebrated the John Wilkes Booth birthday. He's been very controversial. He's been very, you know, he does what shock jocks do, honestly, and that's, you know, stir people up and try to be provocative. However, the news has unfortunately, you know, lost Senator Paul an important, somewhat ally, as Chris Hayes has basically gone on the complete offensive against Senator Paul and has announced that, you know, the senator has exhausted his supply of racist strikes and it has placed him outside of the boundaries of being listened to on anything. Let's check out the first. We'll listen to the clip. Then we'll take a quick listen to Senator Paul's comments and do our own commentary.
Put you outside of the boundaries of being listened to on anything. I'd say white supremacy is one of those. An association with people that hold those views or endorsements of feature of those views, well, they render you unfit. Even if you take the most charitable view possible, that say you get three white supremacist strikes, Rand Paul's in trouble. Strike one was in 2009 when Rand Paul's Senate campaign spokesperson was forced to resign over a horribly racist comment and historical image of a lynching, I'm not making that up, posted by a friend of on his MySpace wall on Martin Luther King weekend. Had been allowed to remain for almost 2 years. Rand Paul then went on the Rachel Maddow show, saying he didn't much like the Civil Rights Act. That was strike two. And now this, Southern Avenger on the senator's staff. Well, I'm sorry, Rand Paul. That's three racist strikes. You're out.
Yeah, so Chris Hayes has gone through three separate instances where, you know, Rand Paul has either said something or he has had people working for him that have gone and committed what Chris Hayes said were racist acts. First of all, I didn't know we got three racist strikes. Did you guys know this? I've not taken advantage of these, I guess.
Yeah. So here's the three strikes. Let's deal with each one. So number one is Rand Paul had a staffer who had taken a picture that was racist. He was in like a KKK outfit or something. And it was posted by a friend to this guy's MySpace page and had hung out there on the MySpace comment page for 2 years and wasn't taken down. He was a spokesperson for Rand Paul's first Senate campaign. How thorough do you background check people when you hire them? You know, I just find these sorts of things, yeah, it is easy to pick on it. But, I mean, do you, in your interviews, when you're hiring people or you're being interviewed yourself for a job, do they think to ask you, like, hey, what's your thoughts on the Jews? You know, like, it's generally not one of the questions, you know. And so he was fired immediately, and the situation was rectified. The second was the...
Yeah, the second was the Civil Rights Act and questions from Rachel Maddow. And really, you know, Senator Paul addressed this in his visit to Howard University earlier this year. A gentleman confronted him with the racist... accusation as well, and Senator Paul was clear that he fully believes in the Civil Rights Act. His concern was the extension and the implications far outside of what the act said, and so topics like that would include reverse discrimination and things like that the senator felt that could need another look, and that clearly, you know, that explanation holds well. Chris, I think you want to add to that.
Yeah, I mean, he basically said that the Civil Rights Act, he had a problem with the part of the Civil Rights Act where the government is telling employers or restaurant or basically not even employers. If you own a restaurant, can the federal government force you to serve people that you don't want to serve? So by
he's talking about the market. He's talking about property rights.
Exactly. And so he's being perfectly consistent with libertarian principles. And he's saying it's not that I would condone a white restaurant owner from allowing only white people into the restaurant. I'm saying that if a black restaurant owner wanted to let only black people in or Hispanic, only let Hispanics in, like it is a property owner and a business owner's right to make that decision. And the federal government has no place in regulating what is or is not. But the left took that to mean that he is a horrible racist white supremacist. So now the third, what's the third racist strike on Rand Paul's record?
So now the third is Jack Hunter and the Southern Avenger, I guess, persona that Mr. Hunter used to run with. And really it just comes down to they're calling Jack Hunter a white supremacist. They're saying that, you know, that he celebrated John Wilkes Booth and felt that he was right to assassinate Lincoln. And you know, Jack Hunter has come back and has basically said, look, I was a provocative, you know, shock jock and that was my job. And actually Senator Rand Paul came out and he basically said, look, people are calling him a white supremacist. If I thought he was a white supremacist, he would be fired immediately. If I thought he would treat anybody of color, treat anybody on the color of their skin different than others, I'd fire him immediately. All I can say is we have a zero tolerance policy for anyone who displays discriminatory behavior or belief in discriminating against people based on the color of their skin, their religion, their sexual orientation, anything like that. We won't tolerate any of that, and I've seen no evidence of it.
Help me get this straight. He is essentially a character outside of Jack Hunter.
Okay, so Jack Hunter was a radio talk show host many right. years ago in Charleston, South Carolina. And, you know, you work at a talk radio station. I worked in talk radio. And I said many times to my radio host, for whom I was a producer, you know, if they had actual tape of me saying or doing certain things when I was on this station, I don't think I'd be the executive director of the Libertarian Party of Indiana anymore. You know, and it's not because I have certain beliefs. I'm certainly a person who stands up for equality and who, you know, believes that every person should have every opportunity afforded to them, just not by forcing others to do it for them through the government. But when you're on the radio, you are hyperbolic, you're provocative, you're mm-hmm. trying to get a conversation started, you're trying to make people laugh, you're trying to be entertaining, and you say things that you may not believe, or you say things beyond the bounds of what you would say in polite company, just because mm-hmm. you're trying to get a rise out of people. That's the whole goal of talk radio. You know, you look
it invokes an emotional response.
Right, exactly. Do you think that Maya walks around talking the way that Maya talks all the time? No. She doesn't.
Kind of.
Well, not in person. Maya is very, very normal in person. But then when you listen to Maya's show or watch Maya on Facebook, she's out of control. Maya Axton, for those of you, the host of The Uncontrollables here on the WAL Radio Network. And she's hyperbolic to try and be provocative, to try and jar you, to break outside of yourself and think a little bit. And by doing it, to be a little bit shocking. So, you know, it just really, he didn't say that John Wilkes Booth should have a national day of worship. He, you know, he wore a Confederate Bars and Stars wrestling mask at some event. Like, it really is beyond the pale of responsible journalism for Salon and MSNBC and Chris Hayes to say that he's a white supremacist. It's so irresponsible and ridiculous that they just make themselves look like fools.
I don't understand why Chris Hayes feels like he has the authority to hand out three racist strikes. To me, that is just incredibly odd that would even be a measure of a person. And guys, are we at a point where no one can have kind of a misguided or difficult youth? Or we really can't have any kind of history of saying something that's a little off color or a little untoward? I mean, like Chris said, there are things that he commented on that would have perhaps disqualified him for being director of the Libertarian Party in Indiana. If there are things in my youth, in my teenage years that if had been recorded or known, I'm sure I would be disqualified for some higher office, which is why I'm not in a higher office, among other reasons. And Joe, I'm sure you're in the same boat. That
heck, we say things in the We Are Libertarians chat thread. We say things that, you know, could potentially disqualify us from any number of things.
We
but
say
usually
things
we're just
on the podcast
around.
On the podcast that we would never want repeated in poll. I mean, it's just. But you're trying to get people to think, you know. And, mm-hmm. and speaking of Maya, Maya blocked someone who, here in Indianapolis, if you are from Indy, you'll know Wilson Allen. And Wilson, his favorite tactic to get a rise out of libertarians is to talk about how white we all are, how lily white the LPIN is, and how black people want nothing to do with us.
See the Puerto Rican flag on my shoulder here, by the way.
despite the fact that Wilson is white as the driven snow himself, but it is his favorite line of attack on libertarians because for some reason the left in this country feels that they are the official spokesperson for all minorities and that anyone who is discussing states' rights is an automatic. You're supporting slavery. That's plain and simple. You support states' rights, you're supporting the policy of enslaving entire races, colors, and creeds of people, which is just so ridiculous.
How do you even make that connection?
Because I had someone post this article on my wall. It was a liberal. It was someone who is pretty sympathetic to libertarians. But then, you know, how do you defend a libertarian like Rand Paul and Jack Hunter? I go, it's simple. Like, you're buying into an article on Think Progress, and you are not using your brain, and mm-hmm. you're not researching what Rand Paul's actual stance on this issue is. And then,
you know what? There's plenty of good things to jump Rand Paul about. You know, I don't want to – I know Creighton Harrington's ears are burning somewhere, but, you know, when Rand Paul comes out and says marriage equality leads to bestiality, that's a good thing to take Rand Paul to task on. Or when he is in favor of sanctions against Iran, that's a good thing to take him to task on. But for these kind of – you know, a staffing issue, guys, are we serious? We're gonna critique him for hiring a very qualified social media expert because of a radio show that this guy did in his younger days. I mean, these aren't even credible questions.
But again, you're falling for it. What did you just say Rand Paul said about the bestiality thing? He never actually said that. He was making a joke on the Glenn Beck show, and because
I saw the clip. Yeah, I mean,
it was a joke, and then the left and the mainstream media spin it out of control to make it look like he's talking about bestiality and that he's concerned about, you know, you listen to the clip and he said absolutely nothing that he has not said before and that libertarians don't believe. It's just that it gets picked up and then even libertarians like us are, oh, well, he's for bestiality. I disagree with that.
No, I'm just saying.
No, he didn't say
those
that.
Those are the things that we should be vetting and discussing, not a... I agree with you, Chris. This is it's a topic that we could easily dispel, just like these other accusations. But those are at least there's some meat on that bone when it comes to hiring decisions, and Chris Hayes trying to basically jab based on an HR issue. It just has no merit.
And not only is it unfair for the media to take that direction with the story, but the people need to have a little bit more smarts about what kind of concepts they invite. You know, this guy, if he is a radio shock jock, they know and they should know that his primary job, aside from giving information, is to entertain. He is an entertainer. He is to acquire ratings. People need to maintain that perspective. Otherwise, Will Ferrell and Step Brothers wearing the Ku Klux Klan uniform to scare people from buying his parents' house is equally as racist as the Southern Avenger wearing a wrestling mask with a Confederate flag, and we're all going to have to start putting our 3-strike stars of racism on our LinkedIn profiles, and that's absurd.
You know, guys, speaking of absurd, let's move on, unless you guys have any other further comments, to what the hell is going on at the Washington Post. This news organization is starting to show signs of bipolarness, I think. You know,
it's a civil war.
What's that?
It's a civil war.
It is. It is a civil war within the Washington Post. Now, of course, we know that the Washington Post, along with the Guardian, have been breaking stories about the NSA PRISM programs and other spying activities, largely fueled by Edward Snowden. Now, the editorial board at the Washington Post recently released an editorial discussing how the best move that the U.S. government could make is by essentially stopping Mr. Snowden from leaking any further information. Absolutely mind-boggling that they're not even acknowledging that Barton Gellman has been a big part of releasing this information for the Post. In fact, Jack Schaefer picked up on this irony in a tweet, which went along the lines of, note to the Washington Post editorial board, Barton Gellman's stories are coming from inside your building.
They were actually really... the publication that he went to, that Snowden went to first. And then when they didn't play ball the way that Snowden really wanted them to play ball, he went to Glenn Greenwald. And Glenn was his second choice. And Glenn's really the one that's gotten the heat on this, not Bart Gellman. But yeah, Snowden was his first choice.
Right. The Washington Post was supposed to be the one that got the scoop. They drug their feet a bit, and Snowden moved on. The editorial board actually came out and said the best solution for Mr. Snowden and the Obama administration would be his surrender to U.S. authorities, followed by a plea negotiation. So essentially, guys, the Washington Post thinks that if you leak any kind of information to them, you should turn yourself in and be sent to jail. What kind of precedent does this set for anyone looking to leak information in the future?
I guess I don't quite understand what's going on over there, because the Huffington Post actually painted it to be somewhat of a different story. They made it sound like there were journalists that were pro-Snowden and journalists who were not pro-Snowden. Those two sides were kind of dueling against each other, and that's where the disconnect was. So what's the case?
Really, what's going on here is that the editorial board at the Post is separate from the news organization. And while you have, you know, people like Bart Gellman writing stories that are fueled and based on the leaks from Edward Snowden, you have this editorial board over this news organization that's saying, no, 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 this is all wrong. They should stop Snowden from leaking more information. You know, why are they letting this happen? And this has got to be stopped. It's really a, it's almost like they're trying to be apologetic about the fact that they're making money and they're sending out, you know, more stories about these leaks.
They need to decide if their primary job is to get the news out to the people, or if their primary job is to, I hate to say shill, because that's the name of this, but be shills on behalf of Washington and do what they're told.
Most likely, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. There will be oftentimes a firewall between the editorial at a big newspaper like that. If you're in Indianapolis, you know, the person who runs the editorial page for the Indy Star probably doesn't have a lot of day-to-day contact with the journalists out on the street. Same with the columnists, you know, and at a post like at the place like the Post or the New York Times, your editorial staff, your opinion writers, they're never going to come in contact with your average beat journalist, somebody like a Bart Gellman. So you're probably seeing very establishment people because your editorial staff will oftentimes be a little more cosmopolitan than your beat writers. They're usually well paid, while the beat writers are usually, you know, not. So, you know, you're probably seeing a group of people writing one opinion while the other half is out doing the job that journalists do. So it doesn't make it right. It is schizophrenic, but it could be one explanation. I mean, I don't obviously work at the Post, so I can't give you the inside knowledge. I can just say, hey, this is what it might be.
You know, Jeff Cohen, and let's try to sneak this one in real quick, had an alternate kind of view on the mainstream media in general. You know, back in June, let's first, Jeff Cohen, he's a pretty well-known media critic, and he's really, as of late, taking some serious swipes at MSNBC, who he previously worked for. This is a guy that's also, he appears on Fox News, MSNBC, CNN as a pundit. So he's certainly a talking head with experience in this area. But he now is seriously questioning whether or not a state-run media would look any different than what we have today. You know, in fact, in June, in a Huffington Post piece, he stated that while an independent journalism system would be dissecting the impacts of NSA surveillance on privacy rights and separating fact from fiction, U.S. news networks have obsessed on questions like how much damage has Snowden caused? How can he be brought to justice? More recently, he placed his ire towards MSNBC and titled it, "How Do You Know When President Obama Is Lying? MSNBC's Progressive Hosts Won't Tell You." Now, if that's not a scathing title to an even more scathing piece of to an op-ed piece, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I mean, it really, there were a couple articles. I think I sent them along. Like, journalism is an act, not a profession in human events. There was also a great article by Jeff Jeffries in, excuse me, Jeff Jarvis in The Guardian. Who is a journalist? Manning trial poses question of vital public interest. But I thought this was a really fun quote on David Gregory, who I really just do not like. New York Times columnist Frank Rich writes, "Is David Gregory a journalist? Name one piece of news he has broken, one beat he has covered with distinction. Any memorable interviews he's conducted that were not with John McCain, Lindsey Graham, Dick Durbin, or Chuck Schumer?" And that just made my heart leap a little bit. So kudos to Frank Rich. You work for the New York Times, but you can't be all that bad now. And Chuck Todd, buddy, I'm sure that Chuck Todd does not listen to this podcast yet, but you should have been in David Gregory's spot. David Gregory is an idiot, and he is not smart. So I hope David Gregory listens to this. Sir, you are not smart. And Chuck Todd is actually a journalist and is a smart person, knows what's going on, knows the ins and outs, has integrity, and would have been the next Tim Russert. He would have asked the tough questions. He wouldn't book Chuck Schumer, Dick Durbin, John McCain, Lindsey Graham every single week to give the same stupid government line. You know, and David Gregory, you're not a journalist because you don't do anything that challenges the status quo.
I love that we're that podcast all of a sudden that Chris just threw the gauntlet down at David Gregory.
You know, he said
the man is an idiot.
You
are
not smart, sir.
Now listen.
No, David Gregory is just he's a product of the Dingbat Factory branded journalism. You know, he's a piece of hair and a tan that
he can
that
read
offers
well.
Nothing more than a smile and shallow commentary. I agree with Chris completely.
Adam Kokesh and Jack Hunter and some of these folks have the same problem. They present themselves a certain way, and people have a certain perception of them. Well, David Gregory does the exact same thing that Adam Kokesh did. They brought weaponry into Washington, D.C. to make a political point. David Gregory, because he is a mouthpiece for the government, gets off. Without even a slap on the wrist, it was laughable that he might even be brought up on charges. Adam Kokesh, flashbang your house, potentially shoot your dog, threaten your girlfriend, kick your friends. You're going to prison for armed sedition because you run a podcast, you run a news outlet that is anti-government in some respects. So I wouldn't say anti-government, but questions the government. So, David Gregory, you are worthless.
All right, here's another media guy that I'm sure we love to hate, and I think this will be the introduction, guys, of a new game that I think we should play from time to time. I like to call this the first round of Jay Carney Said What. And if you guys don't know, Jay Carney is the White House press secretary for the Obama administration. He takes all the questions from the press gaggle. And Chris, I would say he's best known for deflection. Is that a fair assessment, the deflector? Teflon Jay?
He's as skilled a press secretary as we've had since Scott McClelland.
No, and it is wonderful to just listen to these answers and try to decipher them. So during a recent press conference that Jay Carney was conducting, he was asked about delaying Obamacare. And so this is the new GOP drum that they're banging on. This is the business mandate has been delayed, and so now all of it should be delayed. And so a reporter said, well, look, it's not just the GOP. Tom Harkin, Democratic senator, I believe, has said he questions the legality of delaying the mandate as well. And so Jay Carney was asked to respond about the delay and the questions that Tom Harkin brought up. I'm going to give you guys three potential answers. I want you to tell me, and we'll see how this all works out. Hopefully this goes right. Which answer Jay actually used to deflect this question? Are you ready?
Am I going to be able to see the video?
I'm going to give you the answers, and then we'll play the video to reveal the answer. So when asked about Democratic Senator Tom Harkin's comments about the legality of delaying the business mandate of Obamacare, did Jay Carney say, you're talking about the Republican effort to complain about postponing a deadline that affects 4% of businesses with 50 or more employees when they've done everything they can to undermine the law from day one. They don't want to see it implemented. They've made that clear. Or answer two, I'd like to refer you to Mr. Harkin's office for any questions that you may have about his comments. Or answer three, we know what's best for the American people. Sometimes that means reaching past the restrictive chains of the Constitution and changing laws to ensure that the people are not negatively impacted by hurriedly passed legislation. In this case, the administration is casting aside its oath to enforce the laws that Congress passed in order to ensure that businesses are able to implement the mandate on a more appropriate timeline and well past the midterm elections. So I ask you, did Jay Carney say answer one, which was more of a blame the Republicans, answer two, dodge the question and refer it to Mr. Harkin's office, or three, the Constitution sucks, the administration does what it wants, and we can't risk the negative press during midterm elections?
I'm going to go with two and pray that it wasn't three.
I'd say that there's no way in hell that it'd be number three, because they don't know what the Constitution is. so it's number two, because, you know, obviously you need to ask Tom Harkin what Tom Harkin said and meant.
All right, let's play the video.
Okay, and then on the health care, the issue of the employer mandate being delayed a year, under what authority did the White House decide to implement that law a year later than the law itself calls for?
I mean, there are experts aplenty who can.
Oh, it was answer number one.
Oh my goodness!
Answer one. Nice.
Wow.
I thought for sure it'd be two.
Yeah, I know. I really thought that he would say absolutely nothing.
He did not deflect it. He actually threw a hissy fit fueled by GOP rage. It was a wonderful answer, and I am super pleased I got you both.
You think he's that sassy when he's buying his suits at Express Men?
I'm sure he's horrible to the person helping him out. Just awful.
He really is just a blank canvas of a human being. Like, just looking at this photo of him here, he just doesn't look like anything. He doesn't say anything. He's just nothing.
Oh, he's blue all the way down to his tie. He's at least that.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, he was actually a credible journalist, I believe, at one point, and now it's his job to basically deflect and to, you know, basically deny. And you got to think he goes home at night and just cries himself to sleep.
Right. I mean, there's a tension there because he
works. Tears of integrity run down his face every night.
There's that natural tension there where both feel they're working for the American people. They really need to protect their sides for the American people, and we've just negotiated it down to a point where, like, if you get assigned to work at the White House, it's like, oh, why don't you just kill me now? Like, this is where journalists go to die, you know? So
exactly.
It's like, no wonder Chuck Todd doesn't want to talk about George Zimmerman. He wants to actually talk about anything else, you know? He's like, oh, enough bull ass, you know? So
I just couldn't imagine walking into a room of people that absolutely hate me and want me to trip up every single day. I feel a little bad for Jay Carney, but on the other hand, he took that job knowing full well what he was getting into, and I don't know. His integrity is a wet spot on his pillow, though, guys. He is completely empty now.
It is a bizarre thing that, like, we don't really as a government have an official spokesperson. He may be the closest thing. For you know, like Baghdad Bob, how there was Baghdad Bob, and like he was the spokesperson for Saddam Hussein. Like, we don't have like a real press guy, you know. And I work in the PR field, and everything is like, I don't care about the truth. We need to make sure that our client is protected, you know. And it's just that's exactly his mindset. He's protecting his client, and it has nothing to do with what's right or wrong. It has everything to do with protect.
Well, guys, that's it for this news cycle.
Because we got about 5-10 minutes here at the end of the show. Do we want to talk a little bit, maybe move off of media real quick and just talk about Obamacare, and do we think that it's going down or not?
You know, I did see an interesting piece on Reason about the legality of stopping a certain portion of a law once it's been passed by Congress. I'm wondering if you guys want to pick on that for a few minutes. You know, it's one of those things where Reason brought up an excellent point that Obamacare is the law of the land. And whether or not it's convenient, you know, for the Republicans, like Jay Carney was alluding to attack the delay of the mandate, or, you know, whether or not it's legal, as Senator Tom Harkin was talking about, there is an obligation of the executive office, which is the President of the United States, to enforce the laws of the land. And to selectively enforce, to go through an almost line item enforcement is really what I would call this. Can that actually be legal? And there's some excellent analysis that they did from, I believe, the Cato Institute jumped in on a few of those pieces, and a few other lawyers have jumped in and have said, you know, it's not as clear as Jay Carney and the president have made it. And in fact, it could be against the oath of office and the Constitution for the president to not enforce this law. And I'm just curious what you guys think about that. Can a president decide unilaterally that I'm not going to do this, even though Congress says this is law?
Well, first of all, go ahead and say, what's his reasoning for wanting to delay it?
I personally believe the reason for delaying the business mandate is to avoid an issue during the midterm elections. If Obamacare is implemented the way it was passed, I truly believe that the Republican Party will take both houses of Congress in the midterm elections next year.
And that's their fear, is that this is going to, I mean, it's going to be very apparent to the American public very quickly how bad of an idea this initially was, and we knew it from the beginning. And so now they're saying that as a matter of convenience, well, this isn't going to work right away, and so we need to just push that away just a little bit until we can get our affairs in order, and we can make sure that it goes off without a hitch. But it's not going to go off without a hitch. It's going to be a bad thing no matter what. We knew that from the beginning.
They come across to, you know, they say, oh, well, that's a stupid argument because it'll be rolling out in August right before the elections, which that's what they want. They want the glory of this rolling out and people getting that. What they don't want is it rolling out of in August and of this year in two or three months and then having a year of the jobs that this is going to decimate. You know, it's not that business owners and corporations and small business owners especially wouldn't love to give health care to their employees. You know, my dad has owned a small business forever. I've worked for a ton of family-owned businesses. I work for a small business now. And they'd love to give as much health care as possible, 100% coverage. It just financially can't be done. I mean, it's to the point where they can't afford to keep you on the rolls. And so what's going to happen is, listen, I've got to cut you down to 29 hours. I can't give you 30 hours. You know, and then, of course, that'll eventually be made illegal. You have to employ somebody for this certain amount of time because they've got
to force people into the exchanges. Even here in Fort Wayne, guys, an interesting story has emerged where the Fort Wayne Community School System cut the hours of over 600 employees down to 30 hours to avoid this business mandate. And what that really impacts, and I think this is why, at least partially, they've delayed this mandate, is that really that hits home. So parents will notice when the teacher's aides are not as available. They will notice when cafeterias aren't functioning right. These hit right in the backyard, and a school corporation is a business. A school corporation has more than 50 employees, and a school corporation will have to provide this insurance. By delaying these measures, you know, I believe the school systems will be able to reinstate these hours, you know, ensure that education's maintained. There's a lot of unintended consequences like this that are just landmines in communities that I believe are starting to come to light that really horrify the administration.
I mean, I have a family business, and on 4th of July, he's a family business owner. He said to me on the 4th of July, I mean, part of my job as the owner of this business is to make sure that we never go above 49 employees because we cannot afford to pay our employees health insurance. I own the business. Mm-hmm. I can't get myself health insurance. You know, and so once we get to this point, I'd have to fire people. Like, if the choice is giving you health insurance, it just financially, the choice is you get a health insurance or you don't, and you lose your job, or you don't get health insurance and you keep your job. Like, that is the choice. And what you're going to have is just massive layoffs, and you're going to have it hitting the unemployment rate, and it could spike it 1 to 2 points, maybe, you know, and it's going to take some time for it to get to that point, but it's going to absolutely wreck the economy, and they don't want 6 months of horrible job reports before the election.
Yeah, I think it'll happen faster than you actually would think it will. I work with business owners every day. I'm out on the road talking to them, trying to talk to them about their marketing, trying to talk to them about their advertising. It's going to provide a domino effect because not only are they afraid of it, not only are they trying to make adjustments, but everything in the market is so connected. And when that employer starts to lay people off, that means that those people have less money to spend at restaurants, less money to spend out at the movies. And when productivity, it goes down, that means more people are going to lose work. That means they're going to have less money for advertising, which means people like me might be downsized.
And me.
And it's just going to be this grand game of dominoes where people just continue to lose work and continue to lose work, and they should have seen it coming.
And to close that loop, Joe, those will be people who are not in the healthcare system. They're not insured, and that will drive up the cost of insurance and healthcare for the people that are still within the system. It's just a horrible cycle.
I mean, it's tied into this unbelievable fact that comes out this week. I really just still can't even believe it. There are more people on food stamps in this country than are employed by private business. Like, that is staggering. How is that even possible? But, I mean, it's the
truth.
Well,
you borrow, you know, 40 cents on every dollar from China, and it's feasible.
No, but we knew about this years. I think I can't remember what year it was. Was it like 2009 or 2010? Tell me if you read this article. But there was an article that I read, and at the time I read it over, I think, LouRockwell.com. And basically there was this guy talking about how the majority of the food stamp creation had been outsourced to JPMorgan Chase Bank. And so the people who worked there were receiving a small commission every time they were to sign somebody else up for food stamps. And so they were actually being incentivized to put more people on the government dole. And at that point, what's your incentive to get people off of food stamps, right?
And then to do just another typical political pivot, when those programs are in place, then of course the illegal immigration issue comes up, and all of a sudden that's why people come here. And so it's interesting to see how all of these intersect back onto these programs. You know, like Chris said, we have more people on assistance programs than we have actually working. We have the ability to get on these programs, which fuels illegal immigration. These are all tied to Obamacare. I mean, it's what a tangled web we weave when we decide to legislate outside of the Constitution, is how I look at it.
And beyond that, when we try to manipulate the market, with government intervention, that's really where the evil is in this. You know, it's beyond just the constitutional faults, but it's that government interference in the marketplace. It never ends well.
And who's writing that story, right? Where's the media experts that are writing that story?
We are libertarians. We're writing that story. Get on it, Ryan.
So, that'll be on the We Are Libertarians website sometime next week. We'll take a snapshot of this conversation and provide some links and see if we can get this captured. So, guys, I think at this point that is one heck of a news cycle that we've covered. Just a crazy week of, like I said, of resignations, of mandate delays, and of course, the Washington Post acting bipolar. Three racist strikes and apparently you're out, according to Chris Hayes. Jeff Cohen really just laying the smackdown on his former employer and calling out the entire mainstream media complex for basically just being, the official network of the Obama White House. And then Chuck Todd and his sad, sad life of trying to cover the news but being stuck in the Zimmerman trial hell that has hijacked his show and has basically hijacked all of our beloved, talk news for the past how many weeks now. But that is it for the news cycle. If you'd like to interact with any of us, myself, Joe, or Chris, leave us a message on the We Are Libertarians Facebook page. Contact us on Twitter at We Are Libertarians. Use the show report hashtag, and we'll be sure to check out those posts and get back to you. Find out what we left off of this podcast with the page 2 feature of the show report that's available on WeAreLibertarians.com. Listen in on iTunes or Wall Radio to hear past episodes. And also, the show report is available on IndianaTalks.com. And remember, when the media breaks the news, the show report is here to fix it. Good night, everyone.